You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
You're tuned into The Wire, 1 hour of current affairs and analysis starting now.
Tēnā koutou katoa, ko Mary Margaret Sake toku ingoa, no mai haere mai ki te wai mo tēnei rā. Kia ora everyone and welcome to The Wire for Rāmiri Friday, the 9th of November. It's Mary Margaret here and I'm filling in for Laura today, so sadly you'll be missing out on her luscious Canadian accent just for today. But we do have some Friday regulars. We've got Jennifer Rose Tamati here. What's up?
Kia ora.
We've also got some Friday Wire newbies. Olivia Holdsworth is joining us today. We've also got Justin popping in.
Hi.
Me out as he does. So coming up on the show today, Te Rōpū Nahi Nara, we're talking to National Party MP and finance spokesperson Amy Adams. After that, it's Wire Worry Week here at The Wire and we're learning about anti-government movements, and Jim went onto the streets to ask people if they think activism is necessary.
It's true.
We'll see what they have to say.
We will.
After that, Sam Smith from Radio Adelaide is back again for Neighbourhood Watch with all the latest Australian news, and then Liv speaks to James Barber from Stop Oil Wellington about the passing of the Crown Minerals Amendment Bill.
It will be.
Interesting. And finally, we'll be discussing the results from our poll today, which is halting all new oil and gas exploration the right thing to do? So go and vote on that at 95BFM News on the Twitter or at 95BFM on the Instagram. And then, of course, Justin will be coming in and giving us a wrap up on what's happening.
Yes, I'm just going to give a very brief roundup on what's happening in the midterms, and I'm just going to analyse on how this will affect the Democratic Party or even the outcome of the 2020 presidential election.
Fantastic. Well, hea ha ofakaro, let us know your thoughts on any of our stories. Tuku patu humai, you can text us on 5395 or YMI. Give us a call on 309 3879.
Hang about. It's our weekly catch-up with the National Party's Amy Adams.
Tēnā koe, Amy. How are you going?
I'm going really well, thank you. How are you?
Good, thanks. Laura tells me that you were overseas last week. So whereabouts in the world were you?
I was in Hong Kong.
Oh, all right.
Incredibly interesting, actually. I've never spent any time there. So, yeah, fascinating place.
That's cool. What were you doing while you were over there?
It was a sort of a guest of government thing. So the Hong Kong government took me over to show me around, and I was particularly interested in the amount of infrastructure they're building and the way they're doing it. It's pretty impressive. I came back with infrastructure envy.
I love that. So you're back in New Zealand now, though, and what part of the country are you in today?
I'm in a very wet, cold Christchurch.
Of course.
It was 29 yesterday, and now it's like 6 degrees. It's not pleasant.
It's not too good in Auckland, so you don't need to be too jealous, but apparently we've got a good day tomorrow.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, it's definitely spring.
So we'll get into it. The Reserve Bank announced yesterday that they'll be keeping the official cash rate low at 1.75%. Are you pleased that the rate is being held steady?
I think that's been well signalled for a long time. It's what everyone was expecting. The interesting thing for us yesterday was to look at just a commentary around what the Reserve Bank governor was saying. And he's still pretty cautious, signalling that if growth next year doesn't sort of hold up above 2%, we'll have to cut the rate even further. And while inflation, he thinks, is showing signs of picking up, he's going to watch that. But again, he signalled if that starts to take off, he'll have to move further. So we've still got really expansionary conditions in New Zealand, in fact now lower than most of the rest of the world. So still a bit of a bit of signs from him that he's concerned with how our economy's looking and not convinced that it's heading in the right direction yet.
All right. Well, he did say that he thought it could help with maximising sustainable employment and that this is something that could continue to happen until 2020. So are you confident that keeping the cash rate steady will help with that progression?
Well, actually, what he said yesterday was that he thought we're at maximum sustainable employment, and that he really thought monetary policy wasn't a great deal it could do further at the moment. So he was pretty relaxed about that, obviously, with the employment numbers out during the week. He signalled that he actually thinks we're pretty much there. Mostly what he's talking about is his concern between whether economic growth continues to lag or whether inflation starts to pick up, and that's really clearly what he's choosing between. But I think pretty strong signals that the cash rate's going to stay low for a little while yet.
Right. Now, moving to legislation, Parliament has just passed a bill banning new oil and gas exploration, but your party has pledged to reverse this ban if back in government.
Absolutely.
Why is that?
Well, because this is foolhardy legislation that was dreamt up on the fly and doesn't even do what it purports to do. So all of the advice that the ministers have had on this say that this won't help the environment. In fact, it will make our global emissions worse. And it's a lovely sounding idea, and everyone wants to see us transitioning away from fossil fuels. So that's not the issue. But the issue is absolutely around all of the evidence being very clear. We need gas to help us transition away. Now, right at the moment, hard to believe when we're standing here in the middle of a rainstorm, but our hydro lakes are really low. We've got problems with our gas supply, and we've had our energy generators having to burn coal to pick up the shortfall. Now, we want to get them away from coal, but the reality is we just cannot get anywhere near building the electricity, renewable electricity generation we need to simply shut off gas. We need that gas to transition us away from fossil fuels, and if we don't have it, the country's not just going to not turn the lights on for months at a time. It's going to end up importing gas, and that imported gas has a 40% higher emissions profile. So, look, everyone's keen to move away from fossil fuels, but this sort of shooting from the hip solution isn't the way, and that's what every single piece of advice that's come to ministers has said, but they've ignored it and just determined to do something that sounds good. It just makes no sense environmentally or economically.
So perhaps you don't want to back this exact initiative, but the moving away from fossil fuels, is it not something that you want to see succeed at all?
Yeah, well, that's what I just... No, well, you're not listening. I just said we absolutely support a transition plan away from fossil fuels, but this is not the way to do it.
Okay. How would you suggest doing it instead?
So what we need to do is obviously take a long-term view of how we are going to slowly increase our supply of renewable energies. I'm sure you're aware New Zealand already has one of the highest rates of renewable energy in the world. So instead, I just got back from Hong Kong and they're sort of sitting at around 5 or 6% renewables and looking at how they can use more gas to slowly get down the proportion of coal and diesel they're burning. So we absolutely want to see that rate of renewable energy go up. But to take us away from our gas supplies, we'd need to be building a new Clyde Dam every 12 months. Now, that's simply not even feasible, even if there was the willingness in the private sector to invest in that. So we have to use gas to get us off the reliance on coal and diesel in the first term. We have to encourage the uptake of more obviously electric vehicles in the transport fleet. And over time, as we have to build more renewable stations, we've got to see communities in the RMA being much more supportive of building those renewable generation sources. As we do that, then we can come off more gas, but until that's in place, we're going to need that gas supply.
All right, so moving to another thing that the government has just done. They've just announced that they'll devote $3 million to a Rātana community near Whanganui for land development. And Anaya Mahuta called it a development of the goals set out in the Rātana housing strategy of 2009 that belonged to National. So is your party pleased to see the government building on this area of housing initiatives?
To be honest, it's not a particular development I know a great deal about, and it's the government's proposal. You could talk to them about it. I think what's far more interesting that the government's done this week is show this incredible reluctance to explain why they've allowed Carol Schrubeck, this drug dealer, to stay in New Zealand. And I'm sort of surprised actually that didn't come up on the list of topics. We had several weeks talking about Jamie Lee Ross, but the big live issue in balancing the government at the moment is the Minister Enley's getaway decision, having not read the whole file and within an hour, to give the serious criminal residency in Kansas deportation.
Sure, you could
so
be right.
So that's the issue that I think is probably more topical at the moment.
At BFM, we are sort of concerned with stuff that faces young people, and housing is definitely one of those, so it's sort of why I'd quite like to know if you think it's a good strategy.
I'm not saying it's not another important issue. Of course it is, although you're also equally concerned with the Jamie Lee Ross issues, so it does seem to be a little bit partisan. But look, the Rātana development, as I say, it's just not one that I know the detail of. It's something the Rātana community is supporting and will be helpful for their people, then, you know, look, that's a good thing.
Sure. So finally then, Trevor Mallard has been looking into cyber attacks that Parliament in particular is at risk of.
Yeah.
And he asked the Privileges Committee to consider allowing a third party to provide cyber security protection for Parliament. So as a parliamentarian, are you hoping that some third party protection would be enabled?
I do think cybersecurity is something the Parliament has to take incredibly seriously. It's something that I've been quite concerned about in terms of the Parliament and the government more broadly for a number of years. I was one of my ministerial roles included responsibility for cybersecurity, and we were very concerned about this. Of course, when you're talking about Parliament, it really has to have the consent of all MPs, because you can imagine Labour weren't too keen on National putting in place cybersecurity across their computers and vice versa. So when you're talking sort of cross-party, obviously we've all got concerns to ensure that it's handled absolutely independently and appropriately. But I think the Speaker is quite right. I think cybersecurity is a much more serious issue than most New Zealanders realise.
Right.
I think it's critical that fundamental institutions of our society, like Parliament and like ministerial offices and like public departments and banks and all those institutions, have really strong cybersecurity. Sure. And I think it is timely that's looked at. And I hope he gets the very best of advice and that the Privileges Committee work through the obvious concerns that there'll be around ensuring that MPs' information is still secure.
Sure. And cybersecurity kind of is an issue that you never really realise is a problem until it is one. So it does seem
totally.
Like a good thing to guard against.
Yeah. And I think, to be honest, people would be amazed if they knew the full extent of cybersecurity attacks that happen in New Zealand every single day. And most of them are luckily prevented and blocked by our internet providers and some of the national security infrastructure. But actually, there's still a huge amount that gets through. And as you say, until it happens, we're all a bit complacent about it, but I think it's a timely reminder for everyone to be thinking about their cyber protection and you know, all those good old messages about your passwords.
A changing world.
Yeah, that's right. It's just the reality of our more technological age.
For sure. Now, I know that Laura likes to finish by asking you a question about lifestyle advice. So we've been seeing all week
advice.
That there's...
I don't have a lifestyle. I don't know what advice I can give. But
well, I did notice that there's pretty bad weather in the South Island at the moment. So I wondered how you like to spend your bad weather weekends.
To be honest, bad weather weekends, good weather weekends, I'm a bit of a hermit. When I'm not working, I like kind of just holding up at home with the family and the dog and the cat and reading a good book and a bit of Netflix. I'm not a very active person, like you said. I'm not working. We end up so exhausted at the end of the week that the couch, a glass of red wine, a good book and the dog cuddled up beside me is pretty much bliss.
That sounds fair enough. Well, I hope you have a good time doing that this weekend.
Hey, thanks so much. You too.
Thanks, Amy.
The National Party's Amy Adams on 95BFM.
The Wire.
Ki te whakarongo koe ki te Wire, that was Te Ropu Nahi Nara, the National Party's Amy Adams. Next up, it's Neighbourhood Watch, so stay tuned.
OMG, I'm obsessed with this podcast.
Oh, true crime histories. Or Grimm's Missingsville. Is it Criminal Yarns? Craig T. Nelson's Murder Tales.
No.
Oh, I got it. Tragedy Vultures. I love Tragedy Vultures.
Nah, it's one of the other ones where they watch bad movies.
Tacky.
Expand your podcast horizons. All of 95BFM's excellent shows and segments are available as podcasts on iTunes, RSS, or whatever podcatcher you're into. Never miss out again. 95BFM Vcasts. Subscribe to your favourite shows now.
95BFM presents Julian Baker, live at the Tuning Fork, February 15th. An unflinchingly intimate performance from the lauded singer, songwriter, and member of indie supergroup Boy Genius. Julian Baker, February 15th at the Tuning Fork. Tickets on sale Monday from Ticketmaster.
The biggest part of success is perspiration.
A sunbeam through my prison.
No! Mum, the character's a box brownie. Stop acting like a Leica. But it's nothing without that touch of inspiration.
I guess I'm taking this one solo.
A little light, a brief exposure. Is this a refraction or infraction on my heart?
Be inspired. Take your passion for photography to a whole new level with ProGear, unparalleled quality. At Free Railway Street, Newmarket, or online at progear.co.nz.
こちらは 95BFM Audible World です。
The Audible World, world music treats, and bizarro ethnomusicological finds with Andrew McLeod and guests.Let your ears bathe in all the splendor of the planet's oral delights. The Audible World, every Sunday night from 9 till 11 p.m.
Ascoltate il mondo udibile, Radio 95 BFM.
You call that a news update? This is a news update. It's Neighborhood Watch.
It is indeed time for another Neighbourhood Watch, and this week Sam Smith talked to me about public backlash to Virgin Airlines and a cringeworthy trip that their Prime Minister is taking in Queensland, while at the same time in New South Wales, proposed child law reforms pose massive risks to Aboriginal parents and grandparents. Virgin Airlines is rethinking its announcement that war veterans will receive priority boarding due to criticism that it was tokenistic. So when did they first announce the priority boarding plan?
It was fairly recently, and I know that last week they announced in a very 2018 kind of fashion that they would review the policy after it had like immediate backlash.
Right, and who? Where was that backlash coming from?
So on Twitter it was many people, but people have come out speaking about it publicly. It's one person called Neil James, and he's the head of the Australian Defence Association. And he's the person that called it tokenistic and compared it to like a culturally American move that won't translate well in Australia. And there's also Veteran Affairs Minister Darren Chester, and he said veterans would rather have discounted fares, and Aussies tend to be modest, so they wouldn't want to attract that kind of attention on themselves.
Right.
And we have had two veterans as well. So Catherine McGregor, who is a former high-ranking transgender officer, she dismissed Virgin's move and called it faux American bollocks. Sorry if I can't say that on the radio.
It's BFM, you definitely can.
And she would not dream of walking onto on a flight ahead of people. And there was former Army officer Roger Shanahan, who worried that this will place higher value on these kind of services and ignore other services like ambulance, paramedics and police officers and the like.
So do you expect that Virgin Airlines will stand down from the plan?
Well, I think if they do what they said they would do, and that was that they will consult with veterans and with the Army Defence Association as well, which I'm surprised they didn't do in the first place. I think once they consult and realise that people don't think it's a good idea, that they will back down.
So moving on now to your Prime Minister, Scott Morrison. He's embarking on a bus tour of Queensland and sharing the experience on social media, and the whole thing is laden with stereotypical Australian dad jokes. So why does he want to project this image?
Well, yes, he is pretty much a daggy dad now. It's a huge flip from when he was the man behind Stop the Boat. Something I found out was he was behind 100% Pure, which is a New Zealand slogan. So he is a marketing, well, I don't want to say genius, but he has had a lot of experience in marketing.
Right.
So this is a definite move to kind of break away from the former Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull's image of being high-class elite, and now he wants to kind of be like the everyday Australian. And he's doing that through saying things like fair dinkum and wearing hats and taking a bus tour, which I think he hasn't really been in. He's been flying a lot.
Oh, my God.
He has been in the bus, but he's also been flying.
Right. And if anything, it's sort of just opened him up to even more ridicule on social media. So might his approach be counterintuitive?
Well, yeah, so that's the thing. Lots of people are making fun of it, but he's actually taking it on board. So there was this this video where, Mark Humphreys, so he's like a comedian and also a media journalist personality, and he made a video where he pretended to be the director of we call him ScoMo, his awkward Facebook videos, and Scott Morrison loved it, and he retweeted it, and so he's kind of doing well there. When he's being made fun of, he's laughing along with everyone else.
I guess it's kind of like if you join in on the joshing and look unfazed by it, you kind of seem more chill.
Exactly, and I think that's the vibe he's going for.
Right. So finally, on a darker note, if the controversial changes to the New South Wales child protection law go through, 800 Aboriginal children could be adopted without parental consent. So do you want to sort of give us the background to that legislation change and why that type of threat is still a possibility?
Yeah, so this is a bill due to go to Parliament next week. And the idea behind it is the New South Wales Premier, Gladys Berejiklian, said that the reason this could go ahead is because she doesn't want any children left in the out-of-home care system for too long. So she wants to make it a maximum of 2 years to to get the children back to their family, otherwise they'll be adopted out. And many people are criticising this as another stolen generation,
mm-hmm.
because for so many people it takes way longer than 2 years to get your child back to your home.
Yeah. As you say, particularly some activists, Grandmothers Against Removal, have compared it to being another stolen generation, or risks another stolen generation, and they say that their children are not orphans and that the department itself is dysfunctional and not a safe alternative for their children. So I wonder, are their calls gaining much traction?
Yes, well, they're especially in the I affectionately call it the GMA kind of realm, people are against this, but it's yet to take up traction, and I think we'll see more and more being spoken about it. And in fact, what you just spoke about, they were getting evidence from a TUNE report, and that was an independent investigation into the New South Wales child protection system, and they found that the whole system was inefficient, unsustainable, and had escalating costs which were crisis driven, and failure to improve can lead to long-term trauma, which is what Aboriginal people have been facing for many generations.
Yeah.
So I think that no one really wants this to go ahead. No one wants to give the government the right to say whether or not their child can be adopted.
For sure. So how likely is it that the legislation changes that enable that risk? How likely is it that they'll go through?
It's unclear at the moment, because even Gladys Berejiklian herself has said it's not the ideal move.
Oh.
So we'll see. I think all we can really do is wait and see for the results.
That was Neighbourhood Watch. Ripper.
That was Sam Smith from Radio Adelaide. But now,
what are you even worried about? It's Worry Week on The Wire.
What have you been looking into, Jen?
So I had really wanted, I really had hoped to talk to someone today about Māori prophetic movements such as Ratana, which just celebrated the 100th anniversary of T.W. Ratana's visitation by the Holy Spirit, and the government has just announced investment into land development for the community. Unfortunately, I couldn't get through anybody, so I talked to the streets, and I wanted to know people's opinions on activism. We can live in a bit of a bubble here at B, which I do love, but perspective is really important. So I went out and asked people if they thought activism was a necessary part of our democracy. This is what they had to say.
Do you think activism is a necessary part? Is necessary under our democratic model, and why?
Yes, I think it is.
Mm.
you might not. I think it is because even with MMP, it doesn't mean that everyone's interests are going to be represented.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a surefire way to give people a voice, basically. And if they feel strong enough to go out and protest about it, then all for it.
Cool.
Even if it's not something that everyone agrees with, the fact that it's out there and people are wanting to have a conversation. I think that's the important thing, is that people are willing to start a conversation.
I don't really have an opinion. Can be either way, I guess.
Okay.
People have the right to do it, so mm-hmm. why not, I guess.
Providing it's peaceful. Yeah.
Providing it's peaceful.
Exactly. Providing it's peaceful, people have the right to do it, why not? What's that?
Sweet as. Thank you for your time.
Cheers.
Hey. It's needed. For me, it's needed because otherwise the government will do whatever they want. So it's important to say if we are not a good someone for something.
Mm.
I think perfect. It's important to have a government, but regardless, regarding whether democracy or the other forms to be in the other country. So.
Okay.
And we don't really know how to vote for the government because we don't vote.
Yeah.
We can't
okay.
vote here, so sorry.
Well, it's for a good cause, then. Like, I don't think there's nothing wrong with activism.
Okay.
Like, I would participate in that way.
That's so good.
Like, it was just expressing, you know, the freedom to do what, to express what you think is right.
Yeah.
On some issues. For
yourself, yeah.
Activism is like protest, eh?
Like protest, yeah. So basically,
yeah, it's really important.
Cool.
I mean, it's important for us as a society to practice activism as well, because of how
we live under a democratic instead of a...
Yeah, where we talk to one another and like decide together, right?
Instead of demands and how we run things in society coming from one, it's coming from us as a people. Mm. So that how we run things in society is determined by how we come up with the solutions and we come up with how to do things. And so activism would be really important.
I feel like that's a duh kind of.
I mean, it really depends on who you talk to.
Well, I guess as like a minority, you would want to instigate change wherever you can see fit. And if you're at an institute that kind of encourages like critical thinking, you would want to be a part of activism because that's your voice.
Yeah.
And how else are you supposed to leave your mark on the world if you just let it stay as it is and as it was before you?
I think everyone has like elements of protest in them. It's just whether or not you want to bring it out to like the public and whether or not you feel like it would be accepted by everyone. All for it.
Worry Week on The Wire.
That was indeed another Wire Worry Week, and 53295 is the number to text with your thoughts on anti-government movements and their place in a democracy, or more specifically, Aotearoa, New Zealand. But now, what have you got for us, Justin?
Yes, I'm just now it's been 2 days since the US midterm elections and more results have come in. So I just did a little brief summary. But I would describe the election result as a small blue democratic wave, not as big as a lot of people wanted to happen before.
Right. But enough to maybe restore confidence.
Yeah, but there's enough to achieve around 50% of what the Democrats wanted to happen. And basically what on the results, a lot of eyes are on the Midwest swing states, especially on Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Wisconsin. These three states are, a lot of people, they call the Rust States because they're very industrial, and most of the voters there are white working class.
Right.
And in 2016, quite a lot of these three states are won by Donald Trump.
Right.
And basically one of the main reasons he got to the presidency. But the results are very close. In Pennsylvania and Wisconsin, Trump only won very bare. And yeah, these are the swing states that Obama used to win in 2008 and 2010.
Okay.
And as well as Ohio, another crucial swing state, which Trump only won by 8%. But now in the midterms, in Pennsylvania, the Democrats have won the Senate race by 13%. In Ohio, they won by 7% in the Senate race. And one of the most surprising things that happened is in Wisconsin, which the Democrats won the governorship and ousted Scott Walker, who coincidentally was a candidate that wanted to win the Republican nomination in 2016. And now, going on to the election tactics, now the Trump card here is very crucial because it was an advantage to both the Democrats and disadvantage. Well, it was both an advantage and disadvantage to both Democrats and Republicans. And yeah, let's start with the Republican first.
Okay.
Because because Trump himself, before the election, has done a lot of heavy attacking on critics that are senators in red states, especially on the Kavanaugh vote. And it appears he succeeded because at least two senators, Democratic senators, who voted against Kavanaugh's appointment were voted out, such as Heidi Kim of North Dakota and Joe Donnelly in Indiana. So, yeah, it shows that Trump himself still has an advantage,
right,
for the Republican Party, and especially in their own backyard. But the whole Trump card is still beneficial to the Democrats too, because in some areas that they never expected to win in the past, like Staten Island in New York, in the New York state, or even in suburban areas in many states, they are started to win some House seats as well. Yes, but now my main focus today is on the Democratic Party. Obviously, like I mentioned before, we can see the Democrats are starting to win back the support of some white working classes, mm-hmm. again in the Midwest or some swing states. But there is something we can't overlook, is the progressive surge inside the Democratic Party, yeah. because we got now at least 98 women to be have elected in the United States Congress, yeah. which is a new record, and a lot of historical records as well. We got the first Muslim women to be elected as representatives, the first LGBT governor in Colorado, mm-hmm. that is Jared Polis, and the youngest female representative as well.
Yeah. And a Somali American, I believe. Yep,
in New York, and there's one in Iowa First District as well, right. but I forgot her name.
Yeah. But so those in itself are pretty exciting.
It is pretty exciting, but even though this is exciting, this poses a problem for the Democratic Party potentially in the 2020 presidential election, because they need to choose a path now of, are we going back to win, to continue winning the white working class vote, or are we going down to the way to get more progressives right. supporting the Democratic Party? Because now, according to the US media, at least 13 or 14 senators, maybe half of the Democratic caucus in the Senate are gunning for the presidential nomination. Maybe here's three of you that you might already know, that is Elizabeth Warren from Massachusetts, yeah. Bernie Sanders of Vermont, even though he's independent, and maybe you may heard of Cory Booker of yeah. New Jersey. And the problem is, most of these presidential hopefuls are progressives, and some of the things they stand for are not really what white working right. class people want.
Mm.
And especially the white working class vote is so crucial in 2016, or perhaps potentially in 2020, the Democratic Party needed to find a way on how are they going to do stuff.
Right.
But the final thing is, even that is how the Democrats will act in the House for the next 2 years. Are they going to be a wrecker or achiever? Now, Trump says he will work with our Democratic Minority Leader, House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, but I reckon a lot of progressive voters, the Democrats into the House, are expecting them to dig up dirt on Trump as okay. well. But a lot of people, according to exit polls on the US media, they don't really care about Trump anymore. They just want him. They just wanted the administration to focus on stuff such as healthcare, immigration, mm-hmm. and the economy. So what are the Democrats going to do in the next year, in the next 2 years, are very crucial. Because if they are going to just, I'm just going to investigate all the president's tax returns, I'm mm-hmm. just going to do anything to launch a government shutdown, this might be not very looking good to a lot of people.
Right.
But
and you think it would be better for the Democrats to focus on their own voter technique?
It might be, because yeah. if pragmatically, if you want to win 2020, the thing you need to do is be more pragmatic and
yeah. and also just stop giving oxygen to Trump's Twitter tyranny.
True.
Frankly.
Yes. Yeah. And 2020, the first primary of 2020 is only less than 2 years ago, and right. the race is on.
Yeah. Thanks, Justin. No worries. You're tuned into The Wire on 95BFM. We'll be right back after this. It's Hit It and Quit It by Funkadelic. Thank you.
Red Bull Music and Vice are excited to bring you one of the most important voices in Australian hip-hop right now, Miss Blanks, along with local heavy hitters Jess B and K2K for an unmissable show this November. Packed with big personalities and an electric energy, get down to Neck of the Woods on Friday, November 16th for a piece of the action. Grab your $5 ticket by RSVPing at redbullmusic.com.
I should be a DJ. It's just choosing songs, and I'm so good at choosing.
Whoa! Reckon you've got what it takes to select an excellent tune? Ready to make the call? Listen in to 95BFM Breakfast every weekday. Text in your pick for final call, Breakfast's final track of the day, and be in to win a Yui Boom every week thanks to our mates at Orcon Broadband. Plus, all the choicest tunes live on in the 95BFM Final Call Spotify playlist. Many make the call, few are chosen.
Hot damn! Gravel-voiced Gomez lead singer Ben Otwell is heading back to New Zealand for one cozy solo show. If you want to head along for free, then just stay tuned to 95BFM for your chance to win tickets. But you've gotta and you should have a Simplicity B card.
Yellow, green, and blue. Yellow, gold.
95BFM's Border Radio and the Tuning Fork present Ben Otwell, November 14th at the Tuning Fork. Tickets from Ticketmaster.
Irirangi Po, Radio Bosom.
The Wire.
Welcome back to The Wire. Liv's about to talk to us about the ban on any new forms of gas and oil exploration. And we'd just like to remind you that we've got a poll going on that, and you can vote on it on Twitter at 95BFM News. Let's get into it, Liv.
So, Parliament has just passed the Crown Minerals Amendment Bill, which puts an end to new offshore oil and gas exploration. To find out more, I spoke to James Barber from Stop Oil Wellington, and I started by asking what the passing of the bill means for the future of energy in New Zealand.
What this means is that we are going to have to do what we have to do, which is transition to a sustainable and fair economy. That means more renewables. That means a phasing out of the use of fossil fuels, which is what we have to do.
What kind of logistics will be required for implementing this bill?
There'll be a twofold thing. The key thing is that the government work with organisations like unions in order to implement a just transition for workers in the fossil fuels industry. And they are already beginning to do that, but they need to show distinct more commitment to that. For example, they need to make sure that there's a just transition working group on the new climate commission, which is being set up. So they need to make sure that everything they're doing is working to make sure there's a fair transition for workers in the fossil fuel industry as we get out of fossil fuels.
The bill currently preserves the rights of existing exploration permits. So what is the future for these permit holders? How will they be affected going forward?
Sadly, yes, I would say that the bill does protect the right of permit holders. Now, Oil Free Wellington, and I would say most climate scientists would agree, that actually these sort of permits should be revoked, because looking at climate science, looking at the speed at which we need to transition to a sustainable world and society, we can't allow these permits to continue. So sadly, yes, the government is protecting existing permit holders and allowing extensions to the permit, which they should not be doing, because we need to be ending fossil fuel exploration and extraction now, because we can't burn all the fossil fuels we've already found, let alone be allowing any exploration for any more.
Why do people oppose the bill?
I would say that the chief opposition to the bill is from the fossil fuel lobby. I and others from Oil Free Wellington were at the select committee meetings, and the one we were at, it was us and people in suits, which were all fossil fuel business executives. These weren't workers on oil rigs. These were the bosses. These were execs speaking in opposition to the bill. They oppose it, I would say, because they will lose profit, and they don't want to lose profit, of course. Now, their reasons are really spurious. So they'll talk about things like gas as a transition fuel. Now, if we do go down that path of gas, we'll be building all sorts of new infrastructure which will lock in lots of emissions at a time when we should be cutting down on that, where we should be ending the use of fossil fuel power plants. They will be encouraging us to use gas as some sort of bridging fuel, but really that'll just keep us stuck in this use of fossil fuels. They'll talk about how the bill doesn't reduce domestic greenhouse gas emission, but actually, if we want to stop emitting carbon dioxide, we need to stop digging up fossil fuels, which are carbon and burning them. That's one of the first things we need to do.
So the National Party's energy spokesman, Jonathan Young, said that National would reverse the bill when it returned to power. What does this mean for the future of New Zealand?
Well, that's a really disturbing and irresponsible position on the National Party. I would say that since the National Party is all about business, what businesses need is they need certainty. What the National Party is doing there is providing uncertainty. They should be providing a clear direction to businesses that we need to get out of fossil fuels and we need to get out of fossil fuels now. What they're doing there is creating uncertainty at a time where we need certainty in a transition to a sustainable society.
Do you have any last comments you'd like to make?
Oil-free Wellington would say that this bill is good, and passing it is a good step in the right direction, but it's not doing anywhere near enough.
Around, you know, up to 8,000 or 10,000.
Shit.
The Wire.
That was Liv talking to James Barber about the ban on any new forms of oil and gas exploration, and that also happens to be what our poll is today. So let's discuss.
Freedom of speech, it means you have to listen to me.
It's time to have your say. Poll position on The Wire.
It was my first time hearing that, and that's so funny.
Democracy in action.
Let's go for it. What are the poll results?
So to remind you all, the question was, is halting all new oil and gas exploration the right thing to do? We had 15 votes a total.
Okay. Oh, why would you expose that?
Oh, we say it every week.
There's still 24 hours. There could be more.
It is good to know. 73% of people said yes, it is the right thing to do, and 27% of people said no, it is not the right thing to do.
One of those 27% is Amy Adams.
I would say so, and I'd say one of those 73% is James Barber.
So into it. Suits.
So what do you guys think?
I think completely.
It's the
right thing to do, yeah.
I'll quickly bring up what Amy's or the National Party's comments were. So they've said that this ban will encourage imports, admissions will increase, and we have to use gas transitionally, and we don't currently have enough renewable energy resources to cover that. And I don't think that this ban is going to do those things. I think if there was a complete cut, like a cold turkey cut.
Because they're still allowed, the pre-existing permit holders are still allowed to do gas and oil exploration.
Exactly, right. And we still do have that resource available to us.
Right, so it's more of an easing out.
Yeah,
eventually.
I personally think it puts pressure on an industry which probably does have the money to be able to look at new,
and invest in renewable energy sources.
Yeah, exactly, and training people to do that. And right.
And James, I mean, you summed it up well, Jen, by saying that James's point is kind of like, this is a problem and the problem needs action. So if anything, it's good that at least they're giving it a go.
Yeah.
Maybe if it doesn't work, the next government fixes it.
Yeah.
But hey, we've got to try because we
know
that
there's
a problem. Or maybe
Labour fixes it if it doesn't do the thing that they want it to do.
True.
I don't think it's that detrimental to the industry to be exploring new things.
Right.
Because it's just a ban on new exploration. Currently it's still,
Can we just pay attention to this?
I know, it's intense banger that happens every day.
That was quite something.
But still texts us in.
Yeah.
Even still vote on the poll. I'll be looking at it all day. I want to see what people have to say.
24 hours.
5395. 5395. Woo, woo, woo. Excellent. Anyway.
It's called Democracy, sweetie. Look it up.
That was Poll Position on The Wire.
It's literally Stimulated by Tiger. That's the song.
That was The Wire.
That was indeed your Friday Wire for the 9th of November. Kia ora rawa atu. Thank you to everybody who joined us on the show today. We had Amy Adams, a whole lot of groovy vox poppers, Sam Smith and James Barber. Thank you to all my producers. Lovely work today. It was a lot of fun.
Oh,
and we finished
it
off with an absolute banger.
It gets intense, that one.
I'm so into it. Up next is Land of the Good Groove, so I hope you guys enjoy that and have a real good boogie in a true Friday fashion. Hi-da-da.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.